taking a while.
Today we learned even diagram, right?
Well, that would be a challenge. Once it sets it up, I'm sure we could start with it, right? But it would really be a trick to get the theory from Bob's relationship. We could really
explain.
Yeah, explain it. I mean, somebody would have to know.
Well, I don't want to.
We
start with
ands
for just about everything.
Yeah, I know. That would be your coordinating and coordinating and every other kind of thing. I don't know if it's easier or harder to just have one word covering so many meanings. Yep. Oh, did I give you a great time? Yeah. Yeah, just a little while ago. My wife is always after me to get more suits and things. I don't know what I'd do without her. Probably just dress the same way every day. You're like a physics professor, you know. It was Ralph was telling me. He had a physics professor who came to school one day with one brown sock and one black one. I've never done that. Well,
let's... I'm going to start blue and black.
Yeah.
Kind of dark and dressing.
Mm-hmm.
I put together the socks.
Yeah, that's an easy one to make. Make mistake.
And a light though.
Yes, all of a sudden.
No.
We're just in the last narrative here on 1 Samuel 1:1-7 on page 282 of lesson 55. Just to illustrate again this use of clause relationships to pull away and give some anticipatory information and come back to the main narrative and that type of thing. So we'll just run through this last example here, and then we'll get into our translation of Solomon's Prayer. If you would like, I don't know, I don't think I'm going to spend, why don't you just get one there, Eric? I don't think we need everybody to look at it necessarily, unless you want to. I guess it would be fine if you want to, just to follow the rest of it there. Yeah, maybe it would be good to look, but... this main sequence here that we want to see, the relationship, we just kind of given the head of each sequence. Okay, that's 1 Samuel 1:1-7. Okay, so we start off with this, Vayehi Ish Echad, there was a certain man. And of course, the Echad here, they use that often for their indefinite article. A certain one, a man, or there was a man, one, you know, and so the idea is a certain man or one man, and they don't have an indefinite article, so that's what substitutes for it. And this is the beginning of the main sequence, followed by four disjunctive nonverbal clauses that are omitted here. And these nonverbal clauses are, you know, of telling him where he's from and so forth, and his name. Named to him Elkanah, the son of so forth. None of them have verbs in them. Son of Tohu, son of Suf, and so forth, Ephrathite. And two wives are with him, and so forth. Again, none of them have verbs. These are just predications, and so forth. Then you come down to, and Peninnah had children. So Peninnah, Vayehi, Peninnah, Ilazim, so forth. Okay, now that one, you're picking up the Vayehi, and continuing what you started off with. So you start off, there was a certain man, and then you have all these information about the man that's nonverbal clauses. And then the next thing as far as the sequence is concerned is that, and Peninnah had children. But still you have Vayehi here. And so you still have the ambiguous Vayehi. You still don't know until you find the following verbs whether they're going to continue with converted imperfects or converted perfects. I mean, whichever one they continue with, excuse me, is going to determine whether the thing is punctual or habitual. Now, if they continue with converted imperfects, that's your normal sequence, and that would be punctual. In other words, it would be just talking about a historical narrative. If they switch, though, and continue with converted perfects, perfect forms, then that converted perfect is effectively an imperfect. So your converted imperfect is effectively a perfect, and your converted perfect is effectively an imperfect, which would mean that you're dealing with, if you're dealing with imperfect verbs, but it's a past tense narrative, you've got a habitual type of sense. They would do this continually, that type of thing. And so, The next verb that you see is indeed a converted perfect, wa'ala. There's a perfect verb form, and it's converted just because of the context. Just to look at this itself, you can't tell whether it's converted or not, but because of the fact that it occurs in a narrative, it's got to be one or the other. And so you know it's converted perfect. So the continuation of the main sequence now clearly habitual. It's clearly habitual because it's got the converted perfect. That's how you knew. Now suppose this were an imperfect form, converted imperfect form, then it would be, and that man went up rather than that man used to go up. The translation used to go up is coming from the fact that it's a converted perfect, which is giving you imperfect type of meaning. Okay, now the next verb, wayehi again. You've been going along with converted perfects, and then you throw a converted imperfect in. And that is automatically going to draw your attention. You've broken up the what you had been doing. And this is a case of this anticipatory subordination again. This is kind of breaking that sequence and pulling you off to the side, as it were, to give you some more information. And it's pulling you back to an actual, you might say, more of a historical narrative sense rather than the modal, habitual type of thing. So, and when on a given day, you see, instead of if this had been converted perfect again, it would be, and he used to on a given day did do this, but when on a given day, we kind of make an abrupt breakup of what we've been talking about and talk about a specific time now, and when on a given day he had sacrificed, that continues with a converted imperfect to continue the narrative of what had been started with why he there. When on a given day he had sacrificed, he did this in time, not when on given days he used to sacrifice, but when on a given day he had sacrificed. And that's giving some information that's going to lead into another series of habituals that's going to follow when he had sacrificed, he would give, and so forth. So you kind of break it up to talk about a specific situation, and then you go back to your habitual mode again. So notice when Nathan there goes back to a converted perfect. And so when he had sacrificed such and such, he would give, and that's continuing the main sequence. Okay. And then we find a breakup, but to Hannah he would give. And we find now the verb is not first. We have Hannah, wa'ulachana. There you've got the conjunction attached to a prepositional phrase, as it were, instead of to a verb. And so into Hannah, yitain. Now the yitain is going back to a real imperfect, because you've been following a sequence of converted perfects. And when you break that up with a disjunction, you have to resume the actual type of verb that you were trying to get at. And so since they're talking in a habitual sense, you've got to use an imperfect, an actual imperfect. And then, of course, you can continue with your converted perfects again after that. Once you put that imperfect in there, you started a new series, as it were. Now you can convert the next verb, of course, goes back to a perfect, and her rival would vex her, and so forth. You're continuing the main narrative now, again with converted perfects, continuing the same kind of a habitual sense. And then the very last thing marking the end of the sequence is, and thus would he do. Again, this is disjunctive, because wakain there is breaking up. It's not a verb, and so you have to go ya'aseh, you have to go to an actual imperfect form to give that habitual sense again. Okay, are there any questions here as to what's happening? Yes, Eric.
Three last statements here. The Hannah, he will give. Not a race of the game, but to Hannah, he will give it an imperfect. But then we have the key and four with two perfect and then converted perfect. And you know, Jehovah had shut up and then a perfect began, so the arrival would wait. That is the converted perfect. So it's a kind of race of the game, isn't it?
Okay, I'll have to, which verse are we on in the text?
Verse 4 and verse 5 and 6.
Okay, to his wife, and he would give to his wife.
Four.
Okay.
That four would usually be breaking up the narrative, doesn't it?
Hmm. Okay, yeah, the last part of verse 4 here. Actually, it's the first part of verse 5 that he's talking about here. Ulachana yatin. So the others is that he would give to Penina his wife and to all her sons and to all her portions and so forth. but to Hannah. Now, in other words, starting verse 5, we would probably translate that but, because we've got a disjunction. And then we go back, we have to go to a, if we want to keep a habitual mode, which we had before by the converted perfects, because of the disjunction, we have to go to a converted, to a regular imperfect to keep that same sense. And then following that, okay, we have a key clause. The key clause is kind of is separate from the main series too, because he loved. See, that's just a normal perfect form. And because he loved Hannah and Jehovah had shut up her womb. Now, he loved Hannah and Jehovah. The Jehovah there breaks up it from starting another sequence. In other words, you might have expected a converted, I think that's the point you were making maybe. Yeah, you might have expected a converted imperfect. But instead, because the subject was first, you still stay with the perfect. In other words, he's not really starting a series here. And these things are not necessarily consecutive on another. He loved Hannah and Jehovah shut up her womb. Those are two conjunctive statements, but not consecutive. This would be a situation where it's conjunctive, but not necessarily consecutive. It wasn't that he loved her and then Jehovah shut up her womb, but these two events both took place, but they weren't necessarily consecutive. And the way to often do that is to not have the verb first. If you don't have the verb first, then you can keep things from building up a sequence, yes.
And the point I thought was interesting too is that her, no, I'm thinking wrong, this is an arrival, right? So that is not a converted perfect. Is it or a break there?
Right. He calls this an arrival would vex. That's a resumption of the main narrative of converted perfects.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, see, all of this up here was in a key clause. Key, you know, the key clause starting in verse 5 there is what comprised all of that up to her womb.
Yeah.
And then you're that was just a key clause, and now you're going back to your main narrative, which was you had the yitain there, which is a regular imperfect, and then you're going to resume it. See, the key clause doesn't count, as it were, and then because that's a separate thing off to the side. It's a subordinate clause, so it's not part of the main narrative. Yeah. See, you started. It's not really breaking anything up because you already started the thing over with the yitain there, and now you can pick up right following this with a converted perfect.
Breaks the flow, but not.
Yeah. It doesn't break the sequence, but it maybe breaks the flow a little bit because of the key clause. Mm-hmm. Okay. See how interesting this can become. To keep track of all this. See, obviously, in their minds, they are doing this by habit. You know, they're not trying to figure out now. Let's see, resuming the main narrative, doing this, doing that. And from what Elias shared with us, apparently they just automatically do this without even being aware of it in their narrative and so forth. Even today, they're using this law consecutive kind of thing. And they may not themselves be fully aware of what's happening. Okay. Vocabulary in lesson 55, we'll take a quick look at, and then we'll get into this prayer and see if we can ferret out the sequence structures and so forth here. Okay, some verbs. We've got kilkel, which is a pilpel verb, to contain, sustain, or support, kind of like the hithpael, but it's a, you know, one of those variant forms of it. We've got shava, to lead in exile, and it's nifal, passive. The nifal is a passive form, to be led in exile, I guess is what he means. And rechaim, to be compassionate towards someone. Hivdil, to divide or to make a separation. And we'll run into this in Genesis 1. You know, Hivdil, he divided, you know, the light from the day from the night, and so forth. Kilah, to complete or bring to an end. And if you use it with an infinitive, it's to finish doing something. So to finish to do something. Kara, to bow down. Anaf, to become angry. And that's probably related to the af, the nose, again. I can't prove it, but it sure looks like it. We've already seen the idea of anger associated with the nose and the nostrils and so forth. Okay, they seem to have a lot of words for kill and a lot of words for becoming angry. A lot of ways to express it. Pasha, to rebel or transgress. Some nouns, rinna, a cry of joy, and less commonly of suffocation. Barzel, is the word for iron. I always remember this by barbell. I thought of that, and I always got it, barzel. And Pesha is transgression or sin. Menuach is a resting place, or Menucha, yeah, Menucha. Noach is the word for rest, comes from this, but Menucha, rest or resting place, it's a noun form. Baruch means blessed, and Shlomo is Solomon. Shlomo or Shlomo. When I learned it in Hebrew, it was with a silent shwa there, but there's some debate about how they pronounce some of these. So Shlomo or Shlomo. Okay. So let's start with verse 22 of Solomon's Prayer then. And John, go ahead and take a crack at it. Yep. Got to start someplace.
Vayamod Shlomo Livnei Mizbeach Yahweh Neged Kol Kahal Israel Vay Yidrosh
Kapal. Mm-hmm. Kapal, yeah. Exactly what it is. It's another subject for the banquet, isn't it?
Yeah. And Solomon stood before the altar of Yahweh, before the congregation. All the congregation of Israel, and he spread out his hands heavenward, or toward heaven and earth. You got to kind of add that in there. Spread out his hands heaven.
Yeah, heavenward. He spread out his hands. You almost have to understand the two heaven there. Okay, is that what they gave you in the footnote for that, or in heaven throughout? Yeah. In the sense of heavenward. Okay.
It's interesting why they would use this name and make it. Yeah, you know, I mean, it would seem to be drawing some kind of distinction or something.
Yes. This might serve to, you know, a study of those two prepositions to try to discern the difference in the sense here. The Negev may mean down in front of. It's kind of I get the impression that there's an idea of a down associated with it too. So he's before the altar of the Lord, right down in front of all the people of Israel or something. That may be the idea. You might check it in the lexicons to see if they give any sense like that. Okay. It seems to be dealing more with proximity than, and not necessarily face to face kind of a thing. Lisne, you kind of got this face to face idea, and Negev seems to be a little bit softer in that area. Yeah, maybe not quite as an intimate face to face contact, with more presence. Okay.
To bring to the light and to show, to tell. You're supposed to betray and to declare, to confess. And the Hebrew is used emphatically to proclaim, to celebrate, to pray.
Well, that might be what you'd see in a word study in the usage of it. One's dealing with being in front of in terms of the actual physical proximity, and the other's more got the directional attention associated with it. More, maybe a little bit more personal contact. That seems to be the distinction. Okay. Any other questions in verse 1? Solomon stood before the altar of Yahweh in front of all the assembly of Israel, or before all the assembly of Israel, and spread out his hands heavenward. Okay, verse 23. Tony, you want to take that? Okay. Eric, do you want to go ahead? All right.
Vayomer Yahweh Elohim Israel, Ein Kamocha Elohim HaShamayim, Ma
Okay.
And it says, Yahweh is the God of Israel. There is none as you, there is no God as you in the heavens above or upon the earth below, keeping the covenant and kindness to your servants, to the servants walking before you in all their hearts.
Okay. They might make this one evocative here, because Vayomer, and he said, Yahweh Elohei Israel, Yahweh the God of Israel. You might even say, oh, Yahweh the God of Israel, or something like that. In other words, it's evocative address. And there is none like you, and because of the fact it says there's none like you, then again the Elohim would probably be taken vocative. There's none like you, O God. Just because of the word order and so forth. There's none like you, O God.
The word?
So you probably have a different word order. If you want to say there is no God like you, you probably have Ein Elohim Kemocha, something like that. But this word order would lend you more to a evocative address. So he said, O Yahweh, God of Israel, there is none like you, O God. Or it's possible that there is no God like you. That is a possibility. You can't really, you know, you can't really eliminate that just on word order basis. But I think it would be more likely to have the first one. I would accept the other one. It says, in the heavens above or on the earth beneath, keeping the covenant and the kindness or the mercy and so forth, with or to your servants who walk before you in all their heart or with all their heart. Again, that locative idea.
The translation I had, to your walking before your servants.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, could do that too.
Okay, let's see. With your servants. Oh, to your walking before your servants. Okay.
Is that what I wanted to have? I wanted to have the participle modified.
Okay, the problem there is the participle is plural. Holohim. A holohim. Yes, and so it agrees with servants. In other words, with your servants who walk, or your walking servants. Oh, maybe that's what you had, walking servants. Okay, but you did have it modifying servants.
Yeah.
Okay, the way you said it, I thought you had it modifying God or something. But it wouldn't. No, it would be modifying servants. Yeah, keeping the covenant and the mercies to your servants, or to your walking servants who you're walking before you with all their heart, servants. You know, that's really what you're talking about. The whole phrase is modifying the servants.
The ones walking before your face in all their hearts.
Yes.
So that's kind of almost in a positive.
Yeah, that's why it's probably better to take it to servants who walk before, or to your servants, the ones who walk before you with all their heart. In other words, that whole last phrase is in a positive to servants. Or it could be considered an adjectival modifier to servants. Yes, right.
You know the reasons why, again, that wasn't, why it was better to say there is none like you as opposed to there is not a God like you?
Well, I think it's not a conclusive argument, because, again, Elohim could be considered, you know, as the subject. But because of the fact that it says Ein Kemocha, you do have a second person form there, and it is an address, you know, I mean you've started off in an address mode. And because Elohim follows Kemocha, there is none like you, Yahweh. It's almost like you get a pause there, almost like a break there. That would be the reasons, mainly word order reasons. But like I said, there's no way to prove that it couldn't be, there's no God like you. Although, if there no God like you, it would be more likely. See, again, the Ein having a Makesh joined to Kemocha like that, it kind of puts that thing together as one unit. And it's hard to put Elohim in between it. You know what I'm saying? There's no God like you, rather than there is none like you. There's none, not like you. There's not like you, O God. So, in other words, I would more readily expect to say no God like you to be Ein Elohim Kamocha. Have that kind of word order. There's no God like you. Okay. All righty. Verse 24, then, unless there's any other questions here in 23. All right, 24. Let's see, Peter.
Asher Shamarta Le'am Teka David Havi Es Asher Debarta Lo La Tisaber the Sadika U Divika Mileta Kayom Azeth.
This can be a little tricky here.
Referring back to, okay, which you kept
right
with your servant David, my father, and which you spake to him. I should read this before I read it. Make sure I. Sometimes I write it down literally, change it in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Spake to him, and you spake with your mouth, and with your hand you fulfilled as this day.
Okay. Yeah, that's not too bad. This is a little bit difficult. The Asher will probably go back to Beris, Abaris, because it's a covenant. You see, the covenant and the mercy with your servants who walk before you with all their heart, which you have kept for your servant David, or with your servant David, my father. And then the question here is this next Asher, either to continue which you spake to him, that leaves you a little bit high and dry here for the next, which you spake to him, you spake with your mouth and with your hand, have fulfilled it. You might say that which, the way I put it was, which you have kept for your servant David my father, that, and then kind of make a pause there, that which you spake to him, you spake with your mouth and with your hand, have fulfilled it. As it is this day. In other words, kind of a pause there before that next Asher. And let's see. My father. Okay, you've got the eighth there. And okay, that's the reason why I did that. Because of the eighth there.
Yeah.
Makes
the whole subject.
Yeah, makes, well, or direct, or an object there. Yeah. So the thing which you spake, so you spake is the subject, spake is the verb, and then asher would be the direct object. So that which you spake to him, you spoke with your mouth, and which your hand had fulfilled it, as it is this day, or just as this day. Yeah, I think that's the only way you can really make it fit. So. The referring back to the covenant, which you have kept for your servant David, my father. That which you spake to him, you spake with your mouth and with your hand, have fulfilled as it is this day, or as this day. Okay, Price, question?
Asher also has the use of a personal pronoun, so I took that as referring back to Yahweh. So I said, you who kept to your servant David.
Yeah, I started off that way too. You who have kept for your servant David, my father. But the biggest problem was the fact that normally if it was a person that kept someone, they would use a direct object. In other words, for David, if you've kept David rather than for David. For your servant David, you got the preposition lamed on the word servant there, and that seems to set the sense of it a little bit differently. It's something that's being kept for someone rather than someone who's being kept. So a person would keep someone, but a covenant could be kept for someone. Mm-hmm. So you have kept it, the covenant, for David would seem to make more sense on the basis of that only. But it is, admittedly, it's a bit ambiguous as to which the antecedent is, because. In Greek, it'd be a little easier because you probably have some personal, you know, endings and so forth that would line up concord-wise. But since Asher is, you know, is as broad as it is, that is a possibility. But then you'd have to translate it something like you'd have to have something to include this idea of the preposition lamed on servant. So, uh, There's another way to look at it. This is the way I had it originally. Who have kept for your servant David, my father, that which you spoke to him? And then you can make the pause there. And then say, you know, who you have kept for your servant David, my father, that which you spoke to him. And still make that which you spoke to him now the direct object. And with that S there, you could make that the direct object of that first clause and still come by with it. And I guess I really couldn't be dogmatic as to which way it would fit the best. I suppose, if you take it that way, then you still can preserve the sense of the lamas there. And you should just set up a different clause structure. It is an address both ways. It just kind of depends on which you're going to take first and which would be perhaps the most predominant idea. And on the quiz, I would accept it either way for sure. So either which you have kept for your servant David, referring to the covenant, my father, and then make that which you spoke to him, you spoke with your mouth and with your hand you have fulfilled it. Or who have kept for your servant David, my father, that which you spoke to him, and then make a pause there, you spoke with your mouth and with your hand and fulfilled it as it is this day. Okay, if they had more precise punctuation, it would help us a bit, but unfortunately, we don't have that. Verse 25, then, was there any other questions on this? Okay, verse 25, who's next? Doug? Okay. Get a nice long one for you.
Abu, Asher, Delarta, Lo, Lemor, Lo, Ikhade, Laka, Ish, Milifanai.
Okay, yeah, Milifanai. Mm-hmm. Yishmeru, just be a sense of water. Yishmeru.
Vaneka,
okay. You might say keep for your servant David again because of the lamas before Avdika. So keep for your servant David that which you spoke to him saying. You know, in other words, keep this covenant you've spoken to him. Say that which you've spoken to him saying. Okay. Yeah, just pick up from Lemor there to Lo Yikareth. Probably want to translate this cut off in the sense of a man rather than cutting men, cutting them off. So there will not be cut off for you a man, or a man will not be cut off for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Here's the qualification. Right.
According as you
have walked before me. Good. All right. And now, O Yahweh, or just and now, Yahweh God of Israel, keep for your servant David, my father, that which you have spake to him, saying, quote, there will not be cut off of you a man from before me, sitting on the throne, from before my face, sitting on the throne of Israel, only if your sons keep their way to walk before me, according as you have walked before me. So it gives that last qualifier, only if, rock in, only if your sons keep their way to walk before me as you have walked before me. There goes that unconditional promise that the British Israelites always harp on. Okay, yes.
How can you translate that as there will not be a man cut off as opposed to you shall
come? Okay. Okay, there will not be...
I forget exactly how you translate that.
Okay, I translate it, there will not be cut off of you a man. It doesn't have a predication of existence. In other words, there's no aim there, but it's a passive verb form. And so I guess the reason there will not be cut off. So what did you have? You will not cut off?
He shall not.
He shall not cut off. Okay. Yeah, the reason there is that there will not be cut off. It's a passive form. So, nifal. Passive there, the dagation, the kaf there. Okay. So there will not be cut off. Nifal imperfect. Third person masculine singular. And then, of course, the for you or from you, the ka there would help see that too. Okay, any other questions? Okay, verse 26, Bryce.
What a ta, Elohei, Israel, de amen, na. And now, Yahweh, God of Israel, let now your words come true that you spoke to David, my father.
Okay, let now your words come true or be confirmed. It would be translated that it's a nifal from, you know, ne'eman there. So that's also a nifal form. So now, O God of Israel, let your words be confirmed or come true, or whatever I pray, which you have spoken to your servant, my father, David, my father, to your servant, David, my father. Any questions there? I guess the main trick there is just that nifal form. Okay. Questions there? Verse 27, John. Okay, you call Kaluka a good word. It's a mouthful. Okay, good. Maybe a little tricky here.
Because indeed shall God dwell upon the earth.
Right.
Behold, the heavens and the heavens of heavens cannot contain. And they gave something for this off key, but I don't understand why.
Yeah, I don't either. Well, in other words, he's trying to make make it, since the heavens of heavens cannot contain me, how much? You know, that's what he's doing. But
how much is coming from off-key?
No, I think it's coming from the construction hine correlated with off-key. No, in other words, the synth coming from hine, you know, he likes to take hine as anything but behold, as you recall. So he's saying, since the heavens, therefore, how much less, you know, off-key is coming from that. So I translated it just behold. Behold, the heavens cannot contain thee, how much less.
So the av ki is how much?
Yes.
Or how much less?
Yeah, I think that would be the same in either case.
Well, I don't remember seeing the av ki is probably too long.
We better check it maybe.
It's not exact. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, off is just nose. They don't give anything else for it. Okay, you don't remember where you found that. I think he's just trusting his note to satisfy that, but it must have that kind of a sense. So much this, so that, you know, so like hutos and tos hutos or something in Greek. Might check the lexicon there and see if they put off key together as a combination.
How much less
is
this house which I have built?
Right. How much less this house that I have built? Okay.
Off key one probably more than even.
But even, yeah.
Then much need much more. How much more?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How much less? Okay, the fact is, yeah, the heaven of heavens cannot contain thee. So the low yukal kaluka, the low there precedes the is a negative preceding it, so that then they give it how much less.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So this off is a different off than the nose. Okay. Yeah. Obviously. Oh, I wanted to say one thing. At the end of verse 25, then end of verse 25, that lipanai, notice anything funny about that? Last word in verse 25. Lipanai. Yeah, the comments on the last syllable. Any guesses as to why? Pause relationship. Okay. Just want to draw your attention from time to time to it so that we... Huh? Normally patak, yeah. Okay, good. Well, that settles that question about off-key. And any other questions on the structure here? Okay, verse 28. Tony, do you want to take that or do you want to... Well, if you have vocab problem, just ask me on those, and we'll just, because I'm more interested in the structure than in the vocab anyway.
Sometimes vocab helps me see the structure.
Yeah, that's the trouble. You can pick up context. Yeah. Right. Yes.
Upanita el kiplea evoteca.
The last, okay, yeah.
Wael.
Yeah. Get out of practice there.
Tekenato.
Yeah, Tekenato.
Gawa.
Elohai? It's a tricky one.
Elohai.
Mm-hmm. Lishmaha. El. Harina. El. Hatifla. Okay, Hatifla. Mm-hmm. Prayer. Which one syllable? Hatifla. You just saw a shua under the pay instead of a hirik. Mitpaleo. Yeah. Good old hispaleo verb. You've got to have one of those every once in a while. Right. Good. Okay. Shows you what you're going to need to do after you get out of Hebrew classes to try to keep this current. It's very easy to lose your proficiency.
Okay. I have
I have been still in trouble.
You got a footnote on that first one there.
Yeah, well, but...
Well, does it help?
Andrew Turner.
Okay.
I have your service of prayer.
Okay. Yeah, you might say, look, turn toward. May you turn toward the prayer of your servant. Yeah. The reason that I said may you turn is just to pick up the kind of narrative that was in verse 26. Let your word be confirmed, you see. You've got this modal, this kind of a modal sense there, the almost imperative type of sense, and so you pick up that sense. May you turn toward the prayer of your servant. Okay, this, as far as the supplication, it says, turn, and if you turn toward the prayer of your servant and to his supplication. You've got a suffix on supplication there, O there. To hinatho. And to his supplication. And then Yahweh Elohai, oh Yahweh my God. It's kind of a new phrase. And he's addressing him. So may you turn toward the prayer of your servant and to his supplication, O Yahweh my God. And then we continue. Go ahead and translate that to here. I suppose you don't really need to start a new sentence with O Yahweh my God, but just make it, may you turn toward the prayer of your servant and to his supplication, O Yahweh my God, comma, to, and then you continue. Yeah.
To hear the cry.
Mm-hmm.
And to...
Got a double object there, and the...
Hear the cry and the prayer.
Yes. Okay, the trick there is that the mame is not from. It's a participle form for the hithpael. So this is a hithpael participle for to pray. So you might say, the prayer which your servant is praying. Prayer which your servant is praying. It's just like any other participle, but it's a little tricky with the mame there. That's just a form, that's just, you know, indicating the participle. So it's a morpheme for showing participle. So in the prayer which your servant is praying,
today,
which your servant is praying to your face today, or praying before you today. Okay, I'll repeat it then. May you turn toward the prayer of your servant and to his supplication, O Yahweh my God, to hear the cry and the prayer which your servant is praying before you today. Okay, question? Yes, Peter?
The faith is that the plural
of yes. Right. Yeah, you'll find this panim is normally, you know, lifne, you know, it's always a plural, and to your faces, and, you know, I don't know if you even say plural of majesty here, you might just say plural of extent or something, because it's used with people and other things, too. So, I mean, not just with God. So lifne, you see, is normally your form for before anything. You know, lifne him or she or it or whatever. And it's plural form. It's literally to the faces of. Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah, right. Yeah, that would fit modalism just fine. And he would have real trouble with the fact that it's plural even when the subject is singular and it's not God. Okay. Any other questions? Verse 28. That clock is off, so we still got about 3 minutes left. Somebody didn't get saved by the bell yet. Okay, Eric, I guess it's you.
29,
yeah. Lihyot, I guess. Okay, my name will be there. My name will be there. Okay, which your servant will pray toward this place, yeah. Okay? This first phrase is a little bit tough because you start off with an infinitive with a preposition, and the idea is to the being open of your eyes, and it's kind of the intent. So you might say a little bit easier in English that your eyes might be open, or see, it's toward the being open of your eyes. That your eyes might be open is what is our idiom for the idea. So that your eyes might be open toward this house, night and day, toward the place in which you have said, my name will be there. Toward the place which you have said, my name will be there, referring to the temple. To listen to the prayer which your servant will pray toward this place, or which your servant prays toward this place. It's an imperfect, so you can take it either way. Okay, I'll read it one more time. That your eyes might be open, or to the being open of your eyes, toward this house, night and day, toward the place which you have said, my name will be there, to listen to the prayer which your servant will pray or prays toward this place. Okay, good. We'll stop there and continue tomorrow with this. Won't be long, we'll be through this. Now, I haven't given you any formal dates for the vocab quiz yet, have we? We decided we'd wait until after. Well, we'll decide those tomorrow. It'll be coming up before too long, but try to coordinate with the Greek class. Greek is this Thursday, yeah. So I'm sure we won't be this week. We'll be next week, one of the days next week, and then the grammar, one of the days following week.